Well, good morning, folks.
Good morning.
We are in our Advent season right now. And Advent is a time of waiting. We wait for the birth of Jesus. We wait for this incredible hope that'll change the world. But while we wait, we sit and we wait. And day after day passes, our lives still move on. Which means that there are things that can't wait. There are things that need to happen now in this season of waiting. Take our text today as an example. I think our text today is truly, if we're talking about like the hope I hope for, that is our text. If you were to ask me what I think maybe heaven looks like, it would be our text today. Because there is a peace here that transcends our normal understanding of peace. Because I can't imagine this world where the wolf lives with the lamb, where a newborn plays, where venomous snakes make their home, where there is equity for the oppressed. And even though it's unimaginable, what I think is funny is I don't think it's actually unobtainable. We can treat this vision of peace just like that, kind of like a little bit out of reach. Like we're running towards it, but maybe we're like on a treadmill, and it's just kind of like dangling in front of us, and we can't really get it. But I don't think that's actually the situation we have here. Conan, I'm about to share with you a story that I need to preface doesn't make me look good. All right? And I need you all to know that because I know that. But I think it's important that I share this story today that doesn't make me look good. Because it's about a student who tried to punch me in the face. And I have many things on my ministry resume, but self-defense isn't really one of them. You might see me here today as, you know, Pastor Alex, long robes, I'm speaking, I'm preaching. But I'm also the youth guy. And I like being the youth guy. Because youth, one, are a little bit more honest than you all are, which is nicer. And two, working with youth and working with adults are actually very similar. When there's a problem with a youth, usually the problem is there's some dysregulated emotion and there's poor communication. And when there's a problem with an adult, there's usually dysregulated emotion and poor communication. So in my years of working with kids and teens, there are always a few who don't mind pushing the boundaries, right? Pushing a few buttons. And I can feel it as kind of like an everyday struggle. Feel it as an everyday struggle. There was one kid like that in my last youth group. And I understood why, right? He lived in a really tough home. And I would hear stories from what he experienced at home. And I'd say, yeah, that makes sense, right? If I were that kid, I'd probably do a lot of the similar things. At a certain point, I can't blame the seed for what the forest taught him. And for a lot of kids like him, I'm a rock in his road, right? An obstacle to navigate. For a lot of kids, their parents will bring them to church because the idea is, well, maybe through osmosis, or maybe through some divine intervention, my teen will change radically and suddenly. Which, listen, teens that I work with, I think we've built some incredible relationships, long-lasting ones, that I hope that I'm not an obstacle in the road, but walk alongside faith with them. But for kids and teens who typically kind of come and then leave, I'm really just an obstacle to navigate. And studies show that it's actually more of the home that dictates how a kid lives. and also the friends they keep. And so I was struggling with this teen. I had to multiple times physically break up fights, or I had to be on my toes for whatever wisecrack he might come up with. And I had to constantly pause what I was doing to correct behavior or to set a boundary and offer some type of punishment. And it was in times like those where I was like, this kingdom of peace in Isaiah, what an incredible myth. What a beautiful fairy tale we tell our children, that some type of Santa. Life is hard. This teen's life is hard, and I feel exhausted from trying to deal with it. And I remember this kid kept coming back and coming back. And sure enough, week after week, there's drama. There's extra work. There's difficulty. There's hardship. And I remember reading 2 Corinthians, and Paul talks about this thorn in his flesh, right? And it's so funny because he writes about it as this thing that's been given to him to keep him from becoming too elated. I've got this thorn just so I don't get too happy, right? This messenger from Satan, he calls it, sent to torment me. And I thought, Lord, I know that. And that's what this kid was for me. And in my many weaker moments, and I know this is not good, and I know what I'm about to say is not a good thing I'm about to say, but I thought, and I just kind of thought, I was like, maybe if this kid wasn't here, I would feel the peace that they're talking about in Isaiah. And then a shift happened. Not sure why and not sure when, but a shift. He started coming, and he started getting along with the other kids. He participated in class. He started doing things that were outside of the norm. He was happy, laughing, getting along. Things were good. Felt like progress was being made. Like multiple months of him coming to church, having a time. And then I thought, oh, okay. This is the type of peace described in Isaiah, this kingdom of peace. This is great. This will last forever. And it actually ended very abruptly. There was a game day I put on, invited the teens over to the church, and it was a really lighthearted event. Played board games, played card games, and he showed up. Non-communicative, and no eye contact. His mom dropped him off, said, ugh, he's being a pill today. Call me if something happens. And it wasn't bad, at least at first. He started playing, and then very abruptly, he stopped. And he switched, and he kind of found like the other side of the room. He just got on his phone, started watching something on his phone. And well, our church, we had a no phone policy. So I said, hey, you know, why don't you put away your phone and, you know, come join us. And he gave me a look. And he continued on his phone. So I'm still staying lighthearted at this point, right? I said, come on, man, you know, come hang. We're hanging. He looked at me. Continued back on his phone. So I got a little more firmer. I really, hey, if you don't put your phone away, I'm going to have to take your phone. Teachers and parents may be already anticipating what's happening. And he responded with, no, you won't. So I was angry. And I stopped thinking straight. No, I won't. No, I won't. So I at least tried to hide my anger under a little bit of like, I tried to play it off on the game. I said, okay, well, I'm coming over there to get your phone. And he ran. And so I ran. And as he ran, I followed. And eventually I got caught up to him, and he was holding his phone outside of his body, But I got long arms, so it's pretty easy to just, I grabbed the phone, and I did it, right? I did the thing. And I was like, oh, maybe this is the peace of the kingdom. And now he's going to do exactly what I want. And I grabbed the phone, and I brought it to him, and I was bringing it to my face. And closely behind the phone that was coming to my face was his fist, quickly swinging at me. Only missed me about by an inch or two. But for about 10 to 15 minutes, I had a student physically trying to fight me. So his mom was called. He was picked up early. The event ended, and the rest of the teens sent home. And after the event, a few weeks went by, and he didn't show up on Sunday. And this is the point, right? Because I said I would feel the peace of the kingdom when he was gone. When my problem was gone, right? I was like, okay, God, this is it. The peace that we're talking about. Give it to me. I'm here. The problem is gone. But I didn't feel the peace. And in my being unsettled, and in the weeks to follow, I had reasons for what I did, what I did. Well, and I'd say, well, the policy, right? And I think he was emotionally dysregulated, so probably things were always going to end up that way. And I gave him ample time to turn around. And I had reasons I did what I did. And there are always reasons, right? When we mess up a relationship, there's always reasons. Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg has a book called On Repentance and Repair. If you all have the ability to read this book, I encourage you to pick one up. She writes, owning the harm we caused involves risk. And for many of us, it involves not a trivial amount of fear. It can be tempting to try to minimize the impact of our behavior or to justify it with reasons. And all the reasons I gave myself revolved around the same story I always tell myself. Well, I'm a good person. I had great intentions. The situation went poorly. That was on me. And day after day, this relationship stayed broken. And the peace I sought after got a little bit further and a little bit further. And then one day he showed up to church. And as you can imagine, he didn't talk to me. He didn't address me. Actively avoided me. And it was Communion Sunday. Much like today. Which is an interesting day for him to show up. Because communion is the moment of remembrance. You know, we remember Jesus, we remember the sacrifice. But it's also one of the greatest symbols of unity we have in the church. It's something we all take together in our many differences and our many mess ups, and it's a table we all gather around that is big enough for everyone. And God started erasing a part of the story I was telling myself. Because what I really needed to do, even with all my reasons for what I had done, I had to admit that I was also wrong. Rabbi Danya also writes, addressing harm is possible, next slide, Nick, only when we bravely face the gap between the story we tell ourselves, the one in which we're the hero, fighting the good fight, doing our best, behaving responsibly and appropriately in every context, and the reality of our actions. She goes on to say, we need to summon the courage to cross the bridge over the cognitively dissonant gulf and face who we are, who we have been, even if it threatens our story of ourselves. I needed to tell myself a new story. That I also, as the adult in the situation, mishandled it. And not only did I need to recognize that myself, but that teen needed to hear it as well. And I didn't want to do that, right? And like, honestly, here's the thing. I could wait. And if I wait, the problem probably goes away, right? He probably forgets. There's some rug or closet somewhere that we can shove it under. It's fine, right? I can wait. Communion starts getting passed around, and this teen is sitting by himself in the pew. Deciding not to wait, he grabbed a cup and grabbed bread for each of us. And I sat down next to him and apologized. I needed to name the wrong, and I needed to own what I did. I said, you know, I shouldn't have done what I did. As the adult in the situation, I should have handled that differently. It's not okay that I pushed you into an ultimatum, and I let my anger get in the way of finding a better solution to that situation. I'm sorry. And then I said also, I need something from you next time. I need you to help communicate better to me. Because it's okay to come to church not feeling like you want to be there. But we need to agree upon what that looks like. Because it's even okay for you to have your phone at certain times, if that's what you need. I know you might need to take time for yourself. But I need your help talking to me how you're feeling and working on that solution together. And listen, the apology wasn't perfect, and I wrote it a whole lot better now than I probably communicated it then. But after I finished speaking, he forgave me. We shared communion together. And it was then that the peace that I had been fighting for, the peace that I thought would go treating this teen as the problem rather than bridging the gap in our relationship as the problem, the peace that I was fighting for felt there. In covenant, it wasn't just the apology that brought that peace. It was the working toward a better future, relationship in the future. It was in the process of mending that broken relationship. It was allowing God to remake my failure into a future where I could acknowledge that this teen is more than just a thorn in my side, but a complex human being who needs to grow and learn and fails himself and needs grace and patience and guidance so that he can work his own way into right relationships with others. What couldn't wait was repenting, owning my mistake, and looking for a new way forward that leans into a future vision of a kingdom of peace. Because God's kingdom of peace requires us to care about each other. Last quote from Rabbi Dania. She writes, the reason to do repentance work is not because you are bad, bad, bad until you do these things, but because we should care about each other, about taking care of each other, about making sure we're all okay. Repentance is an opportunity to open my heart wider than it has been, to let in more empathy, more curiosity, and about how my choices or knee-jerk reactions have impacted you and have impacted others. So covenant, in this Advent season, repentance can't wait. Getting right relationships with God, ourselves, and with others is not something that can wait, because we're going to mess up. We're going to have plenty of reasons for why we messed up. But the kingdom of peace isn't found in the waiting. The kingdom of peace isn't found in pushing off our problems until they hopefully just go away. The kingdom of peace is found when the wolf lives with the lamb, when there's equity for the oppressed, when God's spirit of wisdom, understanding, counsel, and might bring us past our need to protect the image we create for ourselves, but moves us into right relationship with one another. covenant in the season of